We thank you for listening to the weekly sermon of First United Methodist Church, Missouri City, Texas. We're a church that's making disciples of Jesus Christ for the transformation of the world. For more information about the church and its ministries, or how we can pray for you, visit us on the web at fumcmc.org. If you desire to make a quick contribution in support of our ministries, you can text to give. Simply text the amount you want to give to 281-369-4870 and follow the instructions. And now, as you listen, we hope that you find this podcast meaningful and transformational in your journey of faith.
There's a story on the internet that, and if it's on the internet, it has to be true, because everything on the internet is true. And it's about a church in East Texas that does a children's Christmas pageant, right? And it starts off beautifully. Little Mary, little Joseph go up to the inn. They knock on the door. The innkeeper, 9-year-old kid, opens the door. Joseph says something like, my wife and I need a place to stay. Do you have a room? The innkeeper points to the no vacancy flashing sign, electric in the first century, which was real, and says, the sign is correct. We have no vacancy. There is no room in the inn. And little Joseph and Mary begin to walk off. And this little 9-year-old kid, innkeeper, just precious and adorable, stops them and says, wait, stop. We don't have room, but there's a hotel down the block and they have cable. Now, you and I know that's not really how the story goes. However, let me just ruin your Christmas for a moment. Because the way we think the story goes is that Joseph, who, by the way, if it worked like it did in Hallmark cards, Joseph would fail being a husband in a New York minute, right? Because husbands, show of hands, how many of you would take a pregnant, 9-month pregnant wife, put her on a donkey, and travel from Nazareth to Bethlehem? Anybody? Right. Because we know not to do that. And if we did, Russ, you would be smart enough to at least have made reservations before leaving, right? But Joseph, according to the Hallmark story, doesn't do any of that, because that's not the story. That is not the way Luke recorded it. I am sorry. I am going to ruin your Christmas. I apologize. Kay Tunnel still, 5 years later, won't talk to me because I told her the gospel truth that the wise men were not there the night Jesus was born. Jesus was 2 years old. If your nativity set at home has the wise men, move it to another room. That's where the wise men are. So I ruined it. Kay still won't talk to me. Okay, she talks to me too much. That's my punishment. But I'm going to ruin it, okay? Here's how. If you look in the original language, which we ought to do, because believe it or not, Bible was not written in King James English. It was written in Greek. Luke wrote in Greek. And if you look in Greek, you will notice a big difference that Luke intentionally puts in there. If you look in the Good Samaritan story, Luke tells us that story, that the Good Samaritan takes the man who is beaten and puts him in a hotel. The word he uses for hotel is, are you ready? This one, pandean. That's the word for a Motel 6, a Best Western, a Marriott, whatever brand you want to use. That's what Luke uses. However, in Luke 2, where the Christmas story is, he does not use that word. He uses kataluma, and kataluma translates to a guest room. It is the same room Luke uses when describing the Last Supper in the upper room. Are we clear? And you don't like it. So a better translation, there was no innkeeper. A better translation would be this. Mary gave birth to her firstborn, a son. She wrapped him in clothes, placed him in a manger because the guest room was already full. Big difference. Because what happened was, first off, nowhere in the Bible does it say Mary delivered the night they got to Bethlehem. It just looks better on a Hallmark card. Two, Joseph was royalty. He came from the line of David. He could go to any door in Bethlehem and they would put him up because why? He was a grandchild, great-grandchild of the king. So, right? So he goes to a relative's house, probably, gets there a little late. The guest room is full. And so they put him up in the house. Because in the first century homes, in the towards the center of the home was a sunken area with, guess what? A manger. And guess what? At night, the animals would come in to make sure no one stole them. So the story isn't about some grumpy, mean innkeeper turning Jesus away. It's not about the world giving the cold shoulder to the Son of God and the Prince of Peace. It's about Jesus being born in a home, surrounded by loved ones, surrounded by relatives who would goo-goo and gaga over him just like you would over a newborn baby. That's the Christmas story. It is about the story of being home. With me? You're mad at me. Let's pray. No. We do something here if you're a guest, and we do it pretty regularly. I'm going to ask you to stand. Stand, if you're able. And I want you to turn, not yet, you're going to have homework. I want you to turn to somebody, a couple people. If you don't know them, introduce yourself, because that way you won't be all awkward. And I want you to share with the people who are around you what your understanding, what you think of, what comes to your mind when you think of, when you hear the word home. What do you think about home? Take a moment and do that. Okay, go ahead, have a seat. Let's bring it back. So, anybody want to share what comes to mind? Anybody get a good answer? What comes to mind when you think of home?
Family.
Family, good answer. In the right there, stand up. Stand up on the pew. Get on the pew. No, get on the pew. Seriously, get up. I want to see you. You, with the bow, the cute girl and her brother. Get up on the pew. Okay, what? What are you standing on the furniture for? What? Your house? That's a good answer. Who else? Yes, ma'am. Food? I'm coming to your house after church. Yes, ma'am. Love? Perfect. Love? Being with your dad and mom and the little baby that looks like this big, Your mom, your dad carries like a football? Yeah, I mean, the answers we've got in all three services, yes? Family? Cats? Do you still have, Sarah, do you still have cats you need to get rid of? The Mackays want them. Yes, ma'am. You're thankful for your family. Pay her $5 for that one. Good answer. But see, most of the answers we got have to do with family because that's what we think of when we think of home. We think of love. We think of comfort. We think of security. We think of a place where we're going to be embraced. We do not generally think home as something cold, something where we're going to be treated poorly. It is about a place where we'll feel love and safety and security. Someone at one of the other services said it's like a sanctuary, a safe place where nothing can hurt you. That's home. Now, we've been looking at this passage in Isaiah. We're closing it up tonight, and it's one of those passages that we hear at Christmas time. And Isaiah is writing to these people. And I never really thought of it until this sermon, that what Isaiah was thinking about was home. He wasn't thinking about Jesus being born in a stable and cold world without, he was thinking about home. Because he's writing to people who need a home. He's writing to children of God, the people of Israel, and they are having a rough time of it. They have been beaten, they have been invaded, they have been exiled, they don't know what tomorrow is going to bring. They don't even know what the rest of the day is going to bring. They have no hope for a future. They are in the darkness. If you've ever been there, you know how it feels. You don't know what's going to happen, and you're at your wit's end. That's who Isaiah was writing to. And this is what he said. He said this, chapter 9. He said, "The people who walk in darkness have seen a great light. Those who lived in a land of deep darkness, on them light has shined. For a child has been born for us, a son given to us. Authority rests upon his shoulders, and he is named Wonderful Counselor, Mighty God, Everlasting Father, Prince of Peace." It is about home. Isaiah, writing to people in darkness, says, it is bad now. Things are not going the way you had hoped. Things are not going the way you wanted. But just hold on, because I am promising you that there is a day coming when you will be given a child, where you will have a son, and he will bring you home where there's comfort, safety, security, hope, grace, love. And I thought about how can I get that across to people in a very real way? And I sometimes use this story at a funeral because it means a lot to me. I moved from New York to Florida, and my mom remarried when we were in Florida, and we moved over on the east coast of Florida to a town called Melbourne. It's a beach, towards a beach. And my stepdad's parents lived in a little nothing town called Oviedo. Right? Oviedo's about an hour and 15 minutes. At the time, it was nothing. Now, it officially is the home of the two-time national champion University of Central Florida football team. What school has two seasons in a row undefeated? A&M? No. Alabama? No. LSU? No. University of Texas? Nope. UCF, national champions 2 years in a row. Just saying. Just throwing it out there for you. Sorry, Andy. We're taking you down next week. Just saying, LSU's going down. But anyhow, so it's about an hour and 15 minutes, and on Sundays, about once a month, once every couple of months, we would drive there, and we would spend the day at my step-grandparents. They lived on a lake. They lived in the country, and it was great. And my stepdad, we had this station wagon with with like wood paneling sides. And we would jump in, and I don't know about your world, but in my world, everyone sat in the same seat all the time, right? Stepdad would drive, mom would sit there. I would sit behind my stepdad. My sweet, loving, kind brother would sit behind my mom, and my little sister would sit in what we called the way back. In those days, the back window of the station wagon never really rolled up, right? And the fumes would come in, and am I right, Zach? Is that not Aunt Annie's problem today, right? But that's another story for another day. And so we would get in. Now, I have a question. How many of you are older brothers? Older brothers, raise your hand. Older brothers. Older brothers. Older siblings. Older siblings, raise your hand. There's a special place that God has for you. And it's not in the good place. Because there's something about being the older sibling that you just want to terrorize the little one, right? No, Connor, I know you never did it to Zach. Yeah, uh-huh. You didn't? It wasn't you. My brother, whom I love, we'd get in the station wagon and he would draw a line down the center of the car. And he would look at me and he would say something like, if you touch my side of the car, you will surely die. If you look at my side of the car, if you breathe, if you think about, you will die. And he was big, and I believed, and we would drive, and I would just stay away from the line. And we'd go spend all day there, and it would be a great day, and we'd be tired, it'd be 9 o'clock at night, we'd pile back in the station wagon, my stepdad would drive, my mom would sit in the passenger seat, I would sit behind my stepdad, my older, sweet, loving, kind brother would sit behind my mom, and my sister would be in the way back, and bless his heart, he would do it again. He'd draw the line in the car, and he would go through his whole threat. If you touch, think of, breathe, look at my side of the car, you will die. Well, you know, I was tired. It was a long day. And all I wanted to do was sleep, because I was just an angel of a kid, never causing problems. Ask my mom. I was just one of those kids, good, solid, upstanding citizen. You know, that was me. And all I wanted to do was sleep. And I would lean as far away from the line as I could up against the door, and I would kind of fall asleep. But you know, it's one of those sleeps where you're not really sleeping, you're just kind of sleeping because you were worried, right? That if you crossed, the death was over there. And so we would pull into the driveway, and my stepdad would gently open the car door, and he would come get me. He'd carry me to my bed, and he would, my mom would come tuck me in, and she'd kiss me on the cheek, and she would just gently nudge me and would say, Marty, wake up, we're home. And for just that moment, I would wake up, and I would know that I was safe, secure, comfortable, surrounded by love, in a place where my brother couldn't hurt me. And I could fall asleep. Look, some of you I don't know at all. And I'm glad you're here. And I don't know what's going on in some of your lives. But some of you I know well. Some of you I know exactly what's going on, and you are walking in the darkness tonight. And it's a different reason for walking in darkness for each one of you. Some of you are grieving the loss of a loved one, and it might be something new, or it might have been a year ago, it might have been years ago, and you're still grieving that loss. And especially this time of year, it just seems harder, right? The pain and the loneliness and the emptiness just seems a little stronger this time of year, whether you're grieving the loss of a spouse or of a parent or of a child or of a friend. And it just hurts, and it's worse because everyone around you is telling you to be happy, and you just don't feel it. I get that. And there's others in here, and I know this, that you had us pray for you, and we have, and your church has prayed for you, and your pastors have prayed for you, and your friends have prayed for you, and you get this results back of a medical test, and it is not what you needed to hear. It is not what you had prayed for. And you just wonder, what are you going to do? That's darkness. And there's others who you want to have a good Christmas, right? But the money's tight. Stock market is going down, and you're worried about expenses, and you don't know how you're going to make all the bills, and you want Christmas to be just perfect for your kids, and you wonder how you're going to pull that off. You wonder how you're going to pay the bills at the end of the month. That's darkness. Some, it's that relationship, right? It's that marriage or that dating relationship or the relationship with a kid or a friend, and is just destroyed. You don't know what you're going to do because that relationship is so important to you. That's darkness. And if you're not one of those people who's in the darkness, you are lucky and you ought to be thankful. But the person next to you may be, or the person in front of you. And I can promise you this, not to be Johnny Raincloud, but if you're not there, there's going to be the day where you stand at the grave of that loved one, or you get the medical test back, or money just ain't what it's supposed to be, or whatever it is. That's just part of what it means to be human. We go through those dark times. Well, the good news is the same promise that Isaiah made to the children of Israel thousands of years ago is made to us. For unto you a child is born, unto you a son is given, and he shall be called Wonderful Counselor, Mighty God, Everlasting Father, Prince of Peace. And he will carry you home. It's not going to take your problems away. People still die. Medical tests still don't work out. Relationships still falter. Things still happen. But he's going to embrace you. He's going to whisper words to you. He's going to say, David, wake up. You're home. It's okay. Becky, you're safe. You're secure. I am here. And the darkness is still going to hurt. But there'll be this light that shines. And that's the story of Christmas. It's not about an innkeeper. It's about home. It's about being loved. It's about being embraced. It's about being safe. That's the story. So for those of you who are walking in darkness, you will see a great light, for unto you a child is born, unto you a son is given. And he shall be called Emmanuel, God with us. And that's the promise. In the name of the Father, and of the Son, and of the Holy Spirit.